Welcome to the M2 podcast. Welcome back. Welcome back, Kyle. How's it going, bro?
I don't know.
This is the show. Anyways, we're a little bit rusty, I think, but we're going to see how this goes. This is the show where we basically cover gaming industry related news of the last week. That's pretty much what we got going on. I'm Michael Ancy. This is Kyle Heath. How you doing, Kyle? What have you been doing the last, like, dude, it's been, what, 3 weeks? A whole holiday? Like, what's going on, man?
We're in a new year.
Yes, we are.
Don't know how I feel about it, but hey, we're here. I don't know. It's been pretty good. I had a nice little break myself. Kind of chill out. Got some gifts. Got to spend time with loved ones, and also spent a little time to game. I think mostly nice. Kind of what I played towards the end of December. Played a little bit of like Call of Duty. Wasn't a whole lot.
Okay.
I think outside of that, I was literally sitting here because I played a handful of different things, and like for the life of me, I was like thinking a long time before we started recording, and there's like a bunch of things that I'm just slipping my mind as to what I did in December anyway. I think most recently though, and especially over the holiday, I got back into emulating and trying to get some emulators going and get some of the older games, and I actually ended up playing a little bit of Super Mario Galaxy on my laptop.
No kidding.
Emulated.
Nice.
And it's funny enough, it was hilarious because like originally like I wanted to play some Wii games. And I was like, well, I don't really have like I don't know if I needed like a a sensor bar for my PC that like plug into a USB port. Did some more research and I discovered, which is really funny and really interesting about the sensor bar, is all the Wii sensor bar is two IR lights. And that's pretty much it. There's no tech. There's no like syncing with your remote. There's none of that. It's literally just a glorified light switch, essentially, for those IR lights. And they get, and it makes sense as to why people could just use like candles to use their Wiimote.
Oh right? Yeah, whatever they wanted. Yeah,
two sources of IR light is all you need. But yeah, so I actually still have my Wii. Still works and everything. So I was able to just essentially plug the sensor bar in. I don't even think I need to have the Wii on. I just need to have it like in standby mode. And I can just set it down and then I could strap the sensor bar on top of my TV. And I was playing Super Mario Galaxy on a 60-inch and I was just vibing. And I was like, over halfway through the game at this point. And I don't know. It's a lot of fun. It brings back a lot of memories for me because I remember it was one of my favorite Wii games I think I ever played, Super Mario Galaxy. And just going through the levels again and everything. It's like the memories just flood back as I keep playing. So.
Super Mario Galaxy was really good. I have games like that stick with me. Like Super Mario Sunshine sticks with me. Like,
yeah, oh yeah,
I love that game so much.
Yeah, what
else did you play?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those older Mario games are great, but it's outside of that. I think really I got back into a hobby I sort of started last year, and we talked a ton last year about like emulation and like retro consoles and stuff like that. And for a period I was kind of getting back into repairing older like consoles and stuff like that, and kind of just getting to like use my hands for something because I feel like that's something I've like kind of wanted to do in terms of like a hobby. So I decided to kind of pick back up like just repairing old tech, especially old like gaming tech. So I was looking for some extra Wiimotes, and so I figured why not just buy some, four parts, like some couple like small lots of four parts and not working, and try and see if I can fix them up. And so far I've fixed a couple, and I'm probably going to be doing that. And it's really interesting because like just getting those, and it's like there's been a couple I've gotten though out of these lots because I like went on eBay and got some. There's been a couple that have just been straight up like water damaged or liquid damaged, and it's like, well, can't really do much about this.
This is quite
literally four parts. It's just salvage, but yeah, I mean, I've gotten some. I got a couple ones that were even like good that were just I guess untested. So it's like you get them and they're fine, but you get them kind of cheaper. So. Yeah, I'm kind of I bought a little bit of a surplus, so I'm hoping to kind of resell some of those if I can get them working and kind of make some money and stuff like that. So yeah, I've been like spending a lot of time recently, especially just doing a ton of research on like just kind of what things are going for in terms of price wise around kind of market of old retro stuff. And yeah, probably gonna as I go along, I'm probably just gonna do some more, just buy some different consoles I've never like played with or seen before and try to see if I can fix them, maybe resell some. And I don't know. It's kind of a hobby.
There's definitely a market.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a market for that. There's actually a guy, shout out to him. His name is Tinker. Well, it's Tinker Mods, and he likes to tinker with retro gaming, specifically like Xbox, original Xbox and Xbox 360. He actually lives in the state. He's not terribly far, and I know that because I purchased something from him and it had a return address. So I was like, oh, no kidding. Like, I know where that is. It's really surprising. I was like, no wonder it got here so quick. But he does that very thing. He like buys a bunch of consoles and then he fixes them all up, and if he can't fix it, then it becomes a spare part like place. And he basically is like keeping Xboxes alive because they're not made anymore,
right? Yeah,
so they're going up in value, along with like, not just, some people think you like, if you have the old consoles, you're going to be okay to play it on anything. That's not entirely true. It's like you need adapters, which there's a market for that people have designed for, or you need to go find a CRT. And those things like don't exist anymore. And they're very expensive because people are like, oh, I think I have liquid gold now. you know? So the prices are through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of the same way. Like, I think the idea of kind of like, you know, restoring these old devices and preventing them from being just trash, I think is like,
oh, yeah.
I think it's something like in having someone else to be able to experience this and like you can give it to it, just be like, hey, like this is kind of, you know, it just doesn't die kind of thing. I think there's something really cool in that. So. I kind of like that. And so, yeah, I've been looking into a lot of that. I've also just been doing like, especially over the holidays, I was like rewatching some like, you know, like game related documentaries, whether it's on like Xbox, like the history of that, or like the PlayStation, and, you know, a couple stuff on like, I know, I think I sent you a video. We even talked about it briefly towards the end of the year about the PS3 and kind of the, the development troubles that had when it originally launched. And it's just fascinating to see like all the history of like Nintendo and stuff like that, and how they went through kind of like the GameCube era and like what that was like, because like it really just like it, and it's something I didn't think about until I saw a comment of someone said like the GameCube really wasn't like it wasn't a critically like successful console. Almost, it was kind of like a lot of developers ended up just no longer make games for it because it was kind of obsolete and they didn't like the discs it was printed on and stuff like that, and it just didn't have the same horsepower, and it's like, there's a whole thing. It was interesting to, you know, find out about all that history and just kind of realize like, oh yeah, that like it was kind of the black sheep in that generation. Like, it just wasn't.
It really was. Like, if you had a GameCube, which I do, you can see it if you see the camera right there. I'm trying to and yeah, it's like I still got it, but I got that because I loved like 3 or 4 games on it.
Yeah.
And nothing really else. It's like you said, it didn't have a whole lot of games that the other consoles did. Like, the Xbox at the time was so much more powerful. Same thing with the PS2.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you going to go on the GameCube?
Yeah. It's like, but you know,
Nintendo.
I mean, and that's
I started
the thing.
Off talking about Sunshine. Like, I mean, Mario, that's the Sunshine, thing, yeah. Dude, like, Wind Waker.
They
love those games.
They went for what I saw was called like the Blue Ocean Strategy. It was kind of like, let's build up our own IPs. And like, here they are. Oh, yeah. Still like thriving. Right? It's crazy. Looking at console sales too, like kind of the last point, but looking at console sales and stuff like that, like, the GameCube was like 22 or 23 million. I think the Xbox was like 24, 25 million sales. But the PS2 was 155 million. Like, you're talking about a juggernaut, right? That's why I think it's still like so relevant.
I think so. I think Sony's a little bit more diversified than Nintendo for sure. But Nintendo has the Wii, which had like, I think, the most sales out of any of them, or the PS2 took it over. I don't remember what it was exactly. I know we covered it before, but my memory's slipping. The PS2 I know was in production longer than the other ones, though.
Oh yeah,
It was in production for a very long time.
Oh yeah,
surprisingly long.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Wii did surpass 100 million. I think it was like 101 or 2 or something. Like, just barely surpassed it.
And it's partially because Nintendo just gave up on the GameCube and they're like, okay, console here. But how can we make it different? And then they got the infrared lights and the what's it called? Joy-Cons, I think, is what
like
they called it.
The Wii Remote or something like that.
Yeah, Wii Remote. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, and the Switch too, funny enough, the Switch nowadays is like, it's surpassed like a bunch. And it's like one of the...
Oh, it's insane.
I mean, it's not technically a household console because it's like a hybrid, right? You can take it with you.
Oh, yeah.
But still, it's like ridiculous. It's like 150 plus million or something like that in sales. Yeah. Wild.
I'm excited to talk about the rumors for the Switch 2 today as well.
Sure am as well. I sure am. I mean, look, I've talked long enough. I don't know if I gave you a chance, Mike. Did you mention what all you played?
No, not yet. So I guess this is going to be one of the longer intros that we have with updates because we haven't really sat down and talked.
Started a year, guys. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, to piggyback off of the retro stuff before I get into like the modern titles I've been playing, than modern. I'm still playing like retro games, but in a modern way. But Xbox 360, I've known it for a while, but I think I just went wrong. Like, man, I have three Xbox 360s. I have the OG white one, the really big one. Then I have there's a Halo 3 ODST variant of the white one, and then I have the slim. So it's like I have three consoles. I've seen like the modding community do a whole bunch of different things with it. It's like I already soft modded the original Xbox. That thing is phenomenal. But then you could do crazy stuff with the 360, and I'm like, bro, I'm about to just start doing that now. Yeah. So that's gonna be on my list of things to do, and probably the year 2022. But to go back to like modern titles I've been playing, I finished all the acts except for the last act of Diablo 4. By the way, season 3 is going to launch this month, which is gonna be kind of cool. I don't know anything about it. I haven't looked into it because with me, I'm like, I'm just trying to finish the original story first, and then I'll go look into like, okay, what's new? Like, what's going on? What's changed? That's just how I do things. I've been playing Fortnite Rocket Racing. I was playing Rocket Racing while I was waiting for you to get on. Morning. It's been a blast. Rocket League, of course. Recently started playing the finals, and that game is fun, man. It's a good time. I need two other people that are solid, that are like on the same time frame schedule as I am, so we can put together. That would be a good time. And the last two games I got going are the typical, man. It's like doing Super Smash Bros. Melee. I'm doing Anime Melee, OG like retro GameCube controller, like OEM, like from that GameCube over there. And it's been fun playing with a couple of buddies. And then I've been playing Halo 2 Classic, not just on PC for Cartographer or Master Chief Collection, but also on the original Xbox. I've got myself an M Classic, which upscales it, and I got an EDID emulator, which allows me to do a pass through to my capture card. And the reason why that's necessary is, one, my Xbox is faulty and it can't decide whether or not it is a 480i or 480p resolution signal. So it switches randomly, like I don't understand it. And also my capture card can't do anything that's 30 frames per second. So you gotta upscale it, then you gotta do an emulator to make like tricks the capture card into seeing 60 hertz or 60 frames per second signal. And dude, I don't know if you've caught any of the streams, but the quality is banging. The quality looks better on my stream than it does on my monitor, and it's infuriating because there's like crazy input delay. It's like we're playing and like everybody's on the old school like CRT. It's a bit of a disadvantage, but it's also just like super fun, and it's just a good time to play.
Seems like it. I'm excited. I want to get an original Xbox one day, so you got me hyped to eventually kind of do that one day.
if you seriously want one, like I'm going. I have to go to one of the nearby retro stores in Charlotte, and they always have stuff all the time.
Not really.
So, nice. Well, to be fair, I did go there about 4 or 5 days after Christmas, and it was cleared. So I'm gonna go. I'll probably go like this weekend, maybe, and go check it out and just see what they got. They usually have like, they actually didn't have any Xbox controllers. I was really surprised by that. But they usually have like a full kit of Xbox, Wii, X360, PlayStation 2 even. They'll have those there. So
Very cool. Yeah, I like those retro shops. I wish you had more in my area, but it's like thrift stores are the closest.
Yeah, that's not gonna do it. It's not. Luckily there's a nearby town. If I really can't find anything, I know where to go. And this town is living about 15 years in the past. Like everything. Like there are restaurants there that you thought died in the 90s that still exist in this town. So that's how like in the past they are. But
stuff.
I think we've rambled enough, man. I think we need to actually get into this week's news and like what's been going on.
I think we do. I think it's that time.
And let's start off with some modern hardware. Yeah.
I think
some
we good should, old yeah. fashioned. We talk about the old stuff. Let's talk about some new stuff.
Heck
ladies and gentlemen. We start the year off with a handheld article. I mean, any other way? Should we started any other way?
It looks good too. It looks clean. Good. The images. Yeah.
Let's get into it. The MSI Claw handheld, hands-on. It's more significant than you think. This is from Jacob Roach over at Digital Trends. Pulled this article. MSI is entering the handheld arena, and its debut is more significant than you might think. The MSI Claw doesn't look dissimilar from the Asus ROG Ally or even the Steam Deck OLED, but the specs underneath mark a significant departure from handheld gaming PCs. Looks like Jacob had a chance to try one of these devices at CES 2024, and it's definitely a contender. Bolstered with a new chipset, a comfortable design, and a software designed to tackle the issues with Windows on a handheld, this might be the portable gaming PC to buy this year. Most significant difference with the MSI Claw is the chip it's using. Basically, every handheld we've seen over the past years uses an AMD chipset, usually the Ryzen Z1 Extreme. However, MSI is introducing Intel to the world of handhelds. This device includes a Core Ultra 7 155H, which is a 16-core chip from Intel's new Meteor Lake lineup. It has a ton of CPU cores, but the Core Ultra 7 155H transforms into a gaming device with the integrated Arc graphics. Claw piles on top of that with built-in Intel XeSS support, allowing you to boost the performance of demanding games with AI super resolution. Jacob only had a chance to test a couple of games, Assassin's Creed Mirage, which appeared to run at around 30 FPS, and Sonic Superstars, which was smooth enough that it could have been ran at a full 120 that the screen could display. Notably, he didn't find a frame rate overlay in the menu. I mean, just pause there for a second. It's pretty nuts, Mike, playing 120 frame games on the little handheld. But yeah, I mean, just the pictures, it looks pretty sleek. Doesn't look too crazy in terms of design, but I mean, it looks like a design that works. So
yeah, I think simplicity matters more than anything. I like the further one behind it. I don't know if he's referencing the Legion Go by Lenovo. No, that's the MSI logo. You see it? Yeah. There's tons of vents, probably for like keeping it cool. I wonder if that like helps performance too.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. So of course, peak performance is only one aspect of the handheld gaming PC. MSI says it focused on battery life with the Claw, packing a 53 watt hour battery that it says is capable of 2 hours of battery life under a full load. That may not sound impressive, but it's about 25% higher than what we've seen devices such as the Lenovo Legion Go. Thermal solution is interesting too. The entire back of the Claw is covered in mesh vents, helping the device stay cool and quiet under load. And sure enough, in the demo, the Claw was both cool and quiet. Jacob said he's going to need to see the handheld in action outside of CES show floor, of course, but it's impressive based on early impressions. And the Claw is most similar to the ROG Ally. It's mostly flat, so you grip it between your palms to keep it steady. This is unlike the Steam Deck, which has a chunky handles, as it allows you to grip it with your hands rather than bear the weight on your palms. He said he prefers the Steam Deck approach. I mean, I think he's kind of teach your own, right? Like, I think some people probably like that flatter design. Some people probably like the chunkier design.
It really depends on the size of your hands and like ergonomics.
Yeah, and I think like too, like the Steam Deck, right? Steam Deck's a very not Steam Deck, but the Switch is more like a flat design, right?
Switch. It's very flat.
It's just like
I actually got some new ones for the holidays because they're on sale. They're big now. Yeah, if you put them together, it's like the size of an Xbox controller. It's huge.
I know. I've always ordered. I'd want to get those Joy-Cons where it's like the full grips. It's like nice.
Oh yeah, I got those. I'll send you a link, dude. Yeah. They're awesome.
It's not quite on the same level as the ROG Ally, however. MSI's handheld is a bit heavier at 675 grams, while the ROG Ally sits at 608 grams. It would be hard to feel that weight outside of a side-by-side comparison, but it might add up over an extended gaming session. And I mean, just look at the yellow LEDs. They're pretty sick. I just love the RGB thumbsticks, buttons, the button font like kind of reminds me of that old like PlayStation kind of font.
I like where they have, so you see how they have kind of like your start and select buttons, your menu options, and then maybe there's a volume button on the far left. Let me switch over to a cleaner view. No, they're like start. It's really hard to tell what the options are on both the views. But I like where they are and how close they are to the screen, because to be honest, man, I don't ever press those buttons. So to have them near where like the primary buttons are, I could accidentally press those, and that would be incredibly annoying.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, you know. It's again, I think it's personal preference for the most part, kind of what size and weight you like it. I honestly, like, for me personally, I always like a heavier device. I don't know, there's something about like weight to like a phone or something like that. I just like,
oh yeah,
you not feel like super heavy, it's but indestructible. Like, it's just dense. You know, it's like when a device is dense, I'm like, they packed a lot in here. Let's see what they got.
It's like my Thrustmaster controller. It has no battery. Pick it up, it is a rock. It's like,
yeah, dude,
just heavy.
Yeah. Like the mouse is probably one of the few exceptions where I'm like, I want something kind of lighter, but
oh yeah,
but everything else is kind of like,
even then my mouse is kind of heavy, but I like it this way.
Yeah,
a little bit, like a little weight, not too much that I'm gonna like toss it off, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, most of the devices, you get a device on like Wish or like Dirt or like Alibaba or something, it's gonna be like, you know, it's, if it feels light, it's, you know, because it's probably cheap. Anyways, the basis of the Claw is Windows 11, but MSI layers on top of its redesigned MSI Center M. Here you can manage the various aspects of the device, like fan speed, peak power, and refresh rate. You can also install and launch your games, keeping you off of the Windows desktop. One unique aspect MSI has over other handhelds is that you can install Android games through MSI App Player, which is also included. It's a nice little feature. Put some Android games on there, like that. And you get a controller right there. You ain't got to hook anything up. I like it.
That's a good idea.
MSI says the unit is tested with the unit that Jacob tested was an engineering sample, but it felt surprisingly snappy. A handful of games installed on it launched immediately, and the dedicated buttons for MSI Center and the game overlay popped up in less than a second. Felt remarkably smooth, but the quirks of laying software on top of Windows usually appear after some extended time with the device. To be expected, it's Windows. No. Not perfect out here. Decent amount to go through. So the Claw is an impressive screen as well. Doesn't hold up quite as well to the face of the Steam Deck OLED. It's 7 inches, 1080p with a refresh rate of 120. Pretty much identical to the Rogue Ally or the ROG Ally, which is to say it's impressive, though not on the level of a proper OLED panel like Steam Deck has now. But you know, I feel like most like smaller devices, that OLED's nice. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it is. It is very nice.
It's too nice.
It goes kind of a long way, I think. Other handhelds I wish got up to that like 4K OLED level, though. But hey, take what you can get.
Yeah, for sure. Claw also supports Wi-Fi 7, Bluetooth 5.4. Probably most people don't have Wi-Fi 7 routers yet, but hey, it's there. It's cool to see, kind of, you know, they're looking ahead, trying to support some of the future feature sets. Skip a little bit ahead in the article. MSI says that we'll have three versions of the Claw. One will have a Core Ultra 5 at 512 gigs of storage and for $700. The two models based on the Core Ultra 7 will be 512 and a terabyte of space, respectively at $750 and $800. It is pricey, so we'll need to wait and see. Till we've had a chance to benchmark the device, see the Intel chip takes to hang with the most cost-effective Steam Deck and more established ROG Ally. Won't have to wait long. MSI says it expects the device to be available sometime in the first few months of the year. Maybe around March, maybe April, maybe next month. That'd be kind of crazy. Just like drop it next month.
That'd be kind of sick, yeah.
But yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on over at the convention, the SES.
Yeah, the SES, man. It's
going on all weekend, so for people that are listening to us, go check out what's happened this week.
It's always cool to see. It's cool to see the cool looking tech, but it's also cool to see the just off the wall, oddball like things companies try to do. It's just funny.
Yeah, some of it's like a marketing ploy, I think, you know, like let's just do something kind of ridiculous that nobody really cares about or asks to get into the papers. Yeah. Like Razer right now is out here making ergonomic. Is it ergonomic or it's haptic feedback chair.
Yeah.
So
chair.
And that's kind of cool, but why? You know, like
it's like that's something I really want to try though.
Oh yeah, for sure, dude.
I gotta see what that's like. But Would I own one? Actually, like, I don't know, but
no, I wouldn't. I wanna try it. Actually reminds me of, this is gonna be so dude, the content is gonna be great when the ergonomic chairs come out. Or not the, keep saying ergonomic, haptic feedback chairs come out. So, tangent. Have you seen like the Counter-Strike videos where people decide to like tie their game into a giant compressor underneath their desk?
I think I know what you're talking
where
about,
they have like a mouse and it's like you'll see the person with an op in Counter-Strike go like running around and like once they shoot the whole monitor like you know, imagine that, but it's also with the chair and then they put like in a bag or something and get that's launched like, backwards.
Or it's like the flash, they do a flashbang and it's an actual blinding strobe light. It's just like you can't see. Yeah, those are too funny.
Oh man. So back to the handhelds though. How do you feel about MSI? I think they're a good reputable brand and they make good hardware.
Oh yeah.
I'm curious to see if they're gonna stack up to what, like there are four or five other companies right now that are already in the game.
They're having success, right? So it's like,
you know, there's a market.
I mean, dude, I'm always here for handhelds. I think, you know, now it's like, it's cool to see handhelds come back, especially when I kind of like doing all like the research and kind of what I've seen from, you know, people taking like older handhelds and like, you know, try and make them more modern day with better displays and stuff like that. It's like stuff like that's cool to see. But it's also just like, I mean, you look at this. I mean, this is just a $700 computer that they can carry around. Like, you could probably get emulators on it, and you can like do all that stuff. And it's, you know, kind of, I would hope, you know, to a certain extent, customizable. And it's cool to see just kind of have like, because like you look at this, and like first thing that comes to mind is like, this thing could probably emulate like every handheld game known to man.
Oh,
so
easily,
you just literally buy that, and it's not only modern day gaming, but it's also you could like expand and play the games you may have missed from the past. So I think it's cool to see handhelds again, you know, just like literally having a renaissance over the past year.
It's actually pretty fascinating to see. I always feel like Nintendo is just the ones that are kind of like pushing the envelope. But when they came out the Switch, the only real upgrade they've done is the OLED, actually. Yeah. But to see like now it's the Steam Deck came out and then it's like, okay, the Rogue's come out. Lenovo decided to jump in. It's like, okay, I didn't know Lenovo was this. Yeah. So that's really interesting to see the progress of all these manufacturers just deciding to take their shot. You know who I'm really surprised hasn't jumped? Are companies like Samsung or Sony or LG. Like these companies that are typically making tablets. This would be a good transition for them, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why hasn't that happened?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Tablets and phones. It's like, I feel like that's the natural trend. But hey, whatever. As long as it's a good product and it makes sense, I'm all for mobile gaming.
Yeah, that's all that matters. But I mean, like I said, MSI, like you said, reputable company. So I think it does have a serious chance of being a contender, and I think this is going to be kind of the next handheld we see. You know, that has, you know, good sales. So I'm excited for sure. There's other things, though, you know, going into 2024 that I continue to not be excited about. I'm like,
it's going to be a trend. I think 2024 is we're going to see the most layoffs we've seen since 2008.
It's going to be
really bad in the tech industry, and it already is starting. It started last year, honestly, right? But here we go with Unity, which a lot of people will think to themselves, why does that sound familiar if you've been following gaming? We'll get into that. So this article comes from Destructoid, and it is, oh man, can I, help me. What's his name?
Oh man, another year, another weekend.
Smangaliso Simlane?
Smangaliso, that's the best I got. Smangaliso. Simlane, I feel like it's wrong.
Oh, man.
Just very wrong.
It's a fan. I got to learn this, and we're going to come back and show this man respect.
We have to.
So he titled the article Unity to lay off 25% of its workforce. That's about 1,800 employees.
You hear 25%, you're like, I mean, how much is that really? But then you realize how big of a company Unity is? Oof.
Like, I think, like 1,800 people isn't a lot in terms of the workforce, but if you're losing 25% of your company, you're losing 25% of the culture, good or bad culture.
Yeah.
You're losing it. Definitely. And you have to rebuild that. Imagine 25% of your company just fired people randomly and then go to work the next day and think you're not next.
Yeah, I know. That's all that's going through my head. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
it's like
that's terrible for you, but it's like, what about me? Like, that's what's going on with the existing employees. You know, it's wild. Mm. Layoffs aren't good.
Yeah.
But so Unity is starting the new year with the sizable layoffs. According to Reuters, the company plans to axe 25% of its workforce, about 1,800 employees. The layoffs are expected to be completed by March 2024 and will affect all teams and areas of the business. The internal company memo states that this is being done as Unity restructures and refocuses on its core business and to position itself for a long-term and profitable growth. Yikes. Remember, does this article actually mention what Unity ended up doing? Let's see, the publishing rights? Let's see. So at present, the company cannot determine what the related costs and charges will be, though. Charges will primarily relate to the employee's transition, severance payments, and employee. There also has been no word on what structural changes, though a company spokesperson confirmed that they are coming. So, these layoffs come after Unity faced great controversy in 2023, following the announcement of runtime fees for developers. Plans for these additional fees have continued, and CEO James Whitehurst states it is expected that the impact of this business model change will have minimal of benefit in 2024 and ramp from there as customers adopt our new releases. Yikes, dude. So pretty much what they ended up doing is Unity was the go-to place for, what would you say, like most of indie developers and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. I think of most games, I think most, like when I think of like Unity, like I know one game that comes to mind that was like, I think significant was, I think one of the Life is Strange games. It was like the second game or something like that.
Yeah.
I want to say the second game was made in Unity. And I think they may even make a third game or something like that. But it's like, that was they started in Unreal with the first game, but I'm sure probably either cost or something like that, or you know, I don't know what the backstory is that, but they switched to Unity. It was still great. Like, it still ran well. It was a good game. But that I kind of think about that of like, I always thought of Unity as like, oh, most indie games are probably kind of in a Unity base, because I think it's, you know, probably an easier system to learn, right? So yeah. But I mean, Unity's still great, and I think a lot of companies still use it. Hence why, you know, when they announced kind of some of the fee changes, there was a pretty decent uproar because it was just so significant.
Well, if you remember when we covered some of the comments from the developers that use Unity, they made it very clear they were leaving not because of Unity as an engine or like a service that they can use. They loved it. The problem is the way in which Unity implemented the new like fees. They basically came, they didn't even really do a press release. It was like all of a sudden the fees just changed and they got a little quick memo in an email. And then all the devs were like, what the hell? We didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
You can't just change the contract we had. And it was for all past games, to the point where like there were small like studios that were like, we literally can't make this game anymore because we're going to start losing money.
Yeah, like significant money.
Yeah, significant money. Yeah, one of them, I think he said he was, I think six figures. I don't know if he said it got up to seven,
Totally,
but it was, I remember it was like 200 grand. He's like, that was the number that was thrown out.
Yeah,
and it was like, bro,
that's just going to be left on the table and consumed.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, he's like, so we're going to move everything to Unreal.
It's like we're out.
Oh, crap. So the last bit of article here before we wrap this one up is last year, this is the sentiment is basically why we decided to cover this article is the layoffs. So the last year, the gaming industry witnessed waves of layoffs striking several companies. It appears the trend is far with Unity's massive layoffs bringing a bad start to the year. VR studio Archeact has also announced layoffs in 2024. I mean, just some of the layoffs that we've already heard of, I mean, I was looking at stuff this morning, and it's like pretty much the tech industry is getting hit. One of my friends got laid off relatively recently. I need to reach out to him. I haven't had a chance to, just to see how he's doing. He works in tech. Yeah. So that's tough. It's not gaming industry stuff, but I mean, this is coming. Yeah. And Google got hit. Amazon's next. Samsung is going to lay off people in like 2 weeks, and they're releasing their entire new Samsung Galaxy phones in a week and a half. So
yeah, I mean,
Twitch laid off 500 plus people.
Yeah, massive layoff. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's wild. I mean, because I'm the same thing too. Like, you know, I've had like there was a couple coworkers this past year I had that were kind of laid off, but it's, you know, it's, I mean, there's, I think at some point everyone's been affected by, you know, a layoff, at least if not in their company, like a family member or someone like that. Like, it's just, it's absolutely insane. And, you know, and it sucks to see that this is a trend that's probably not going to end soon, right? I mean, just with the way everything's going, whether it's economy, the industry, I mean, it's just, yeah. And like, where, you know, I think part of it, like we mentioned, is I think probably ripple effects of like, you know, COVID and like the boom of hiring and like, oh, we need people. And then now it's like, okay, we're starting to level out. So I think it's what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of 3 or 4 years of overhiring.
Wait, what'd you say? You like cut out like half that sentence.
I've noticed the mic is cutting out in my call. Or
I don't know. It's like that whole sentence.
I'll bring it a little bit close. I'll bring it a little bit closer. Hopefully it doesn't pop. Sorry if any. we're coming back from break.
Listen,
okay,
you know, a couple more kinks.
And we don't edit here, all right?
This is raw.
Anyway, this is raw, baby. This is called podcasting. No, so what I was saying was that so we had a period of excess hiring where people are just like, we had really low interest rates and it was just made economic sense. Like, okay, let's go get all the talent we can, because if we get enough talent, then our competition won't be able to have them, which is great from a business perspective. So that happened. So then you're laying off people because you overhired, but also interest rates are going up. And we also had like five, I don't even know how many, like I know I can say confidently three major banks collapsed in the last like 16 months. So nobody's really talking about that either, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
It's like, you remember when like the second largest bank ever collapsed? Oh, you didn't know that happened? Well, now you do. Go. It's crazy. Look it so up. All of that is all tying together, I think. So what's going on?
Yeah, no, I think it is. It sucks, man. And I feel like every week we're going to have some sort of, you know, company to talk about that's laying people off. And it's just harsh reality right now. So,
yeah, I don't want to talk about it, though, but you're right.
Yeah, that's the same thing, too. It's like, it's, you know, this still is hard for me to talk about because it's like, it's just, you know, it's stuff you really hate to see. We don't got to cover news around here. Should we do something more positive, Mike? Maybe.
Yeah, I'm excited for the next one.
Maybe more positive. I don't know. Depending on your viewpoint. Man, I'm
That's a good point. Yeah. Let's say interesting is the word.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, Giovanni Calentino. Oh, but I did this. Sorry. You know, like, it just has that vibe to it. All right, Giovanni over at Digital Trends. I'm just like the people that watch the NFL. It's like a Tommy DeVito. Like, sorry.
Oh yeah.
Ubisoft, Tencent will begin using NVIDIA's AI generated NPC tools. Again, they're mixed opinions. I certainly have my own opinions on this as well. So, NVIDIA announced an expansion of its previously revealed AI game-making tool, NVIDIA Ace, at CES 2024. Now available to partners as Ace Production Microservices, gaming companies will be able to use specific pieces of the multifaceted tool that's capable of generating AI-generated video game characters. Ubisoft and Tencent are among the first major studios utilizing the process. NVIDIA Ace is a platform that allows creators to generate non-playable characters via AI. NVIDIA achieves this with several different tools. Characters can be dynamically rendered into a game scene, and an audio lip sync tool can make it so their mouths match with what they are saying. The tool is also able to translate player speech to text, feed it to the AI NPC, and spit out a response via a separate text-to-speech tool. In short, it can create fully voiced, dynamic video game characters. That's terrifying. Cool, but kind of terrifying.
Cool, but terrifying. What's it like? Bad, but not terrible.
While NVIDIA ACE itself isn't new, microservice opens the entire pipeline up to partners. Now developers can use one piece of the toolset rather than the full closed system. As part of the announcement, NVIDIA revealed that several big-name publishers are already on board. Both Ubisoft and Tencent are partners, though it's currently unclear how each publisher intends to use the service. Other partners include Charisma, Convey, I don't even know how to say it. InWorld, yeah, NetEase, I know NetEase. Yeah, NetEase, I know NetEase. Arpalm and Unique. That's a funny way to do Unique. It's UNEEQ.
It is, I
like that. And Genshin Impact developer, MiHoYo. I said that nice. Right, MiHoYo. MiHoYo Minyo. So this is my head just going MiHoYo Minyo. I'm sorry. All right. Also unclear is what Data Ace is trained on. When we asked about the dataset used to generate writing and voices, NVIDIA noted that there is no simple answer, end quotes. It pointed out that it's using several AI tools within ACE, and each one can be trained on different datasets. It's likely not the firm answer that opponents of AI in video games want to hear, even if it is a common refrain in the tech space. For instance, NVIDIA's stance leaves questions about whether or not the tool is trained on voice actors who have willingly agreed to use their voice for AI. ACE's potential integration into major titles by a company like Ubisoft is sure to spark some controversies among artists who seemingly can't be assured that their work isn't part of the training data. That's another outlet about this I didn't even like think about, is like just the consent from current voice actors if they try to use a similar voice to theirs, you know? That's kind of, damn, it's crazy.
That is kind of wild.
But yeah, I don't know. My opinion on this, I think overall, I will say I truly feel for, like, you know, voice actors and, you know, these people that work in games that, you know, a significant portion of their living probably comes from, you know, providing their sort of their voice and their talent and all that. So to see, you know, AI come along and, you know, have these fully voiced characters that, you know, it makes me wonder what kind of the emotion conveys in these characters too, of like how lifelike it seems. I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier, right? So I feel like it gets closer and closer to the point of where we can't, you know, differentiate one or the other from real or AI. But I have a weird feeling about this. It's cool to see. I think part of why I've enjoyed playing a lot of single player titles is because, like, you really feel for the character, you understand the character on a deep level. And then, like, if you really enjoy the game, like, I know if I really enjoy a game, I immediately go and say, okay, who voice acted this character? Because, like, I want to see, like, what else they do. Or, like, it's cool to, like, you play different games, right? You see, oh, I know that guy, he voiced this character, and now he's doing this. Like, that's awesome. And you get to see all these kind of different, you know, perspectives. So I think that's a really cool piece to single player games for me. And so the fact that that could no longer be the case one day is, like, kind of upsetting to me, but I don't know. It's cool tech. Don't get me wrong. I think the technology aspect is pretty dope, but at the same time, I'm just like, I like having that human element. And I think we even talk about that sometimes, just having that. It's cool to know that human is, you know, behind it, right?
Yeah. I mean, how many times I feel like I don't want to sound like a broken record, but maybe we have some new listeners. It's like gaming and making a game is a form of art in a way.
It should be
an expression of an individual, not created by a computer.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel.
I think that's fair. I do think that the AI stuff is inevitable. Like, we've gone too far already.
I mean, yeah.
I think at this point you have to constrain it.
Yeah.
In a way.
Like
There needs to be legislation at this point.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think any of the legislation is going to happen in the United States. I think it's going to have to come from Europe. And what the UK and EU does, because they seem to be the only ones that are like actually serious about it. And we're gonna get into it a little bit at the end of the podcast episode about which article I'm referring to. But yeah, having AI, it's impersonation in a way. You're impersonating a character in a game that, I mean, yeah, it doesn't exist, but does it exist? Like, are we all in a simulation? Like, where does it stop, you know? Yeah. I think that's what it's about.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's, I don't know, it's scary, but but you make a very solid point of, like, at some point it's going to have to be, like, regulated and constrained and, you know, because it's going to happen, right? It already is happening. So it's kind of just, like, we need to find a way to kind of control things, I feel like, just so, like, we can just, like, keep jobs, but also just keep human connectivity. Because, like, it's another thing that scares me, too, when I see, like, ads and stuff of, like, it's like your very own AI girlfriend. It's like, that scares me. Like, why are we doing this?
It's,
like,
it's not good, man.
It's just not, man. Like,
I feel like humans are social creatures and 100%. They need to be social. 100%. We're like kind of a pack family element, kind of community based species. So if you don't really have that truthfully, then like, what's happening?
What do you have? Like,
you know,
it's
like, yeah. Man. And that's not even to say like you can have like community fellowship strictly online with like real people.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Which is good. But it's like, dude, what about this AI stuff? Like, what's that? What's the show? There's a movie that had this 10 years ago. Is it Her?
Her, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, that's where we're at. Yeah. And like, and we can even say like the dark side of this AI stuff is Skynet. It's freaking Terminator, dude.
Literally.
So it's like Terminator, like Skynet is a real. Skynet is a real thing that's happening right now.
Yeah.
It's Skynet is in control of my RTX voice for NVIDIA, and it keeps cutting out my voice. They know, man. They know I know things. So what I'm saying is like, you got to contain it. Unplug the router, bro. If it's unplugged, Max, you're okay.
So. Get off the grid. That's all I'm saying. It's wild out here, man.
But even then, it's like AI can be such a very useful tool. It's like inventing the wheel all over again. Like, once you have that wheel, you're going to be soaring down the mountain, and it makes your life easier. But if you don't, like, you got to have it. It's a lot of power. You got to use it wisely. With great power comes great responsibility.
Sure does.
Dude, I also watched Spider-Man.
It's crazy to hit me with the Her, man. That's a Joaquin Phoenix movie. That's fantastic. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary, but he did. Yeah, that was a good performance, I must say.
Yeah, he always performs, dude.
Yeah, dude, he's the man. Listen, he's Joker, but also Nintendo Switch 2, Mike. People will be calling this console a possible Joker with these frame rates and resolutions that are rumored to be coming with it. I know we have something to talk
about. There's so many rumors coming out with everything. Now, let me know if, because I got my peripherals and I can see when my mic isn't lined up. Okay. So right. I'll try to repeat myself. But if it happens, feel free.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call them out. I don't know what to say.
All right. So this next article, we're going to talk about Nintendo Switch 2 and the latest news. So this comes from Screen Rant, a place we've covered countless of times. But I don't think we've ever covered Ben Brusovsky.
Brusovsky, that's a dope name. I like that.
It is. It's very dope. I hope I pronounced it correct. Shout out to Ben over here. So Nintendo Switch 2's latest news might actually be a good one. A recent update regarding the Switch 2 makes some ambitious expectations seem unlikely, but it actually points to a wise course of action. I'm not reading the summary. We're getting right into it.
Get into the article, baby.
The latest rumors about the Nintendo Switch successor have managed for what the console...
It's managed what?
I'm wondering if it's like the gain. Let me turn it down. Am I too quiet?
Yeah, now you're too quiet.
Okay, tell me. Good?
I don't think it's the gain. I remember when it happened.
Just turning off.
A couple times. I think it was like one time it happened. Like you fixed it by like, I don't know, it was like unplugging something or like what you did. I remember it worked. Whatever you did, it worked. I remember you fixed it one time. I just forget how.
If I unplug it, I got to restart my whole computer. If I plug it right now, I'm pretty sure it's going to crash.
We're deep, ladies and gentlemen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We made it 50 minutes in. Shout out if you made it.
Shout out.
we appreciate you. Okay, so I'll try to keep a peripheral on this little light over here that says it's got my voice. And I'll try to maintain the same volume. So if I sound a little monotone, sorry, but let's get into it, okay? All right, so the Nintendo Switch successor have managed some expectations console might be. But the picture that they paint of Nintendo's next venture isn't necessarily a bad thing. As the follow-up to a hit console, a potential Switch 2 has to live up to, and avoiding a market disappointment like the Wii U is crucial. Nintendo hasn't generally been expected to reinvent the wheel with the successor, but that hasn't stopped discussion of the ways that the company could leap into the future with its next system. I feel like I just crushed it right there. Okay, we got... All right, I'm just not going to move, not going to change anything. We're going to get really stationary. At the moment, it seems likely that the Switch 2 could release in 2024, which would place it comfortably in the middle of the current Xbox and PlayStation generation cycle, like other recent Nintendo systems. It has been some years since Nintendo has tried to compete on the same playing field, instead aiming for a unique angle with interesting console and more affordable price points.
I was like, is he talking? Like,
yeah, I had to double check. A Switch successor is obviously going to be more powerful than the original, but how favorably it might compare to Xbox and PlayStation capabilities has been the subject of some debate. So, the Switch 2 will likely be iterative, and ooh, that's a good thing. Okay. Okay, let's get into it. Yeah. So, recent speculation on the upcoming Switch successor comes courtesy of Game Industry Biz Roundup analyst predictions for gaming in 2024 with Dr. Serkin Toto of the Japanese consultancy firm Ketten Games weighing in on systems expectations. According to Dr. Toto, a Nintendo Switch 2 is likely to reach a $400 price point and be an iteration rather than a revolution, sticking to the overall design of the current console while possibly adding some frills. It's easy to run with this analysis as a negative indication of playing it too safely with the system, but this approach isn't a bad thing for consumers. Interesting. What do you think so far?
It's kind of crazy because, like, when I think about it, like, when you think about the history of, like, Nintendo consoles, like, I'm talking, like, up till, like, GameCube, right? So, like, we think about GameCube. Kind of wasn't that successful. I mean, it was still, you know, not, like, majorly successful. And then you had the Wii, right? Exploded. It was a total switch-up, total game change, right? Exploded. And then you had the Wii U, which is kind of an iteration of that, but it introduced that, like, pad, right? So you had, like, the separate, like, touchpad kind of controller that was, like, off. It was, it was kind of like the, like, I almost think about it like a prototype Switch or something like that, where it's, like, you didn't have the joysticks, and it's kind of its own mobile thing, right, to a certain extent. That was, but didn't do, it was the worst-selling home console, right?
It was.
And then you get to the Switch, and it's, like, they took that, made it 20 million times better, and boom, one of the best-selling consoles of all time. So it's like, yeah. I expect the next iteration. This makes sense if it's going to be some sort of iteration on top of the Switch. I don't expect it to be some like groundbreaking next level thing because that's kind of the trend of how it goes. Like you kind of have a mid console, revolutionary, mid revolutionary. So like, I think this is kind of we're in the tier where it's kind of just going to be like, I don't want to say mid, but like it's just going to be kind of a, it's not going to be crazy, right? At least I don't expect anything nuts.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think what needs to happen with the Switch, and I think we're going to get into it, is it needs to have better hardware to keep up with modern games. I think that's the primary thing that has to happen because there are existing games going on right now that just can't really run on the Switch. And it has nothing to do with the capabilities and the design of the game, and it has everything what the Switch can handle.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not that good, basically. Yeah. The graphics aren't as crisp.
Yeah.
That's the next topic over here. So let's just jump into the Switch's graphics have become a problem. That's probably what he's about to reiterate yeah. to. So the fact that the Nintendo Switch is weaker than its competitors isn't a real issue, but the degree of separation has started to become one. When the Switch first launched, it was competing with the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, and it beat the upgraded Xbox One X to the market. It was obvious that internals of a $300 weren't going to compare, but year one titles like The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Xenoblade Chronicles 2 showed that it could wrangle some impressive feats at mostly manageable frame rates and resolution. That is very true, I think.
Yeah,
very true. Yeah. Breath of the Wild looks phenomenal. And I've never played Xenoblade Chronicles 2, although I did download it. One of the many games I've downloaded, not played. It is clean. It looks really nice. But considering the Switch's market relevance, however, multi-platform releases can be a big draw, and it doesn't really have the capability to handle many of them well in 2024. More recent games, like Mortal Kombat 1, which had hilarious pictures and renders. Did you see that stuff? Because it's supposed to be like kid friendly ish. So a lot of the gore was out.
I don't think I did. That sounds weird though.
It was also looking like Roblox. People were memeing so hard over Mortal Kombat 1. Oh, by the way, man. I should have said then. I started playing Mortal Kombat 1 on the PC.
Oh,
I should have mentioned
that
earlier.
He's out here.
Yeah. I am. Whatever. Next week we'll talk about it because I need to get past the tutorials. And Hogwarts Legacy. So more recent games like Mortal Kombat that were met with heavy criticism as muddy graphics ultimately lost most or all the visual appeal that they have on other platforms.
Yeah. And just to reiterate that, because so you cut out from Hogwarts Legacy to criticism. So I will say this. games like Mortal Kombat 1 and Hogwarts Legacy attempted Switch releases that were met with heavy criticism.
Thank you, brother.
Hogwarts Legacy, man. Great game, by the way. But yeah.
Okay, so making a Switch successor, the target for titles like the would be the easiest way to make sure that the final products live up to expectations. I feel like that's very true. And then the last little section Ben has put together is the Switch 2 needs to be an affordable hybrid console. And I feel, to be honest, it's gonna be. Don't you?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's gonna be, like, the thing with most tech like this, especially with something like the Switch, right? Like, it's had its iteration. When you go to a more, when you move on from something or you want to improve upon something, I mean, I think a big thing we've seen is like, you know, oftentimes like a price drop of some sort, right? Or like if not a price drop, enhanced features at the same price kind of thing. So I think it would definitely do Nintendo some good to have kind of probably a reduced pricing model. But, you know, at the same time, Nintendo, I mean, they've done their thing, you know what I'm saying, with the Switch. Like, they've sold so many units, and it's like they've kind of come in and conquered. So at least in that kind of handheld market before all this other handhelds came out, it's kind of like, again, it was Nintendo kind of, you could argue probably Nintendo helped set that trend of handhelds again, but I don't know. There could be debate there, but I think, you know, it would be interesting to see if Nintendo would be willing to, you know, drop a price cut on the next iteration of their Switch.
That would be kind of, yeah, that'd be sick. Okay. Now, let's just continue on. The balance between home use and portability, has been a huge part of the reason that companies are willing to attempt challenging ports to the system, as Nintendo Switch has a player base and use case that doesn't fully overlap with other consoles. Yeah, I think that's very true.
That's a good point, actually. Think about that.
Yeah. Altering this premise in any major ways would make it hard for the Switch 2 to recapture the same appeal and potentially cost both system sales and interest from developers. Nintendo isn't likely to make every future console follow in the mold of the Switch, but shaking up already would be a waste of the strong position that the company currently holds. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a
bad point. I like this Ben guy.
Yeah, he's got some cool opinions, you know what I'm saying? I agree with this.
He does.
He knows his stuff.
So it is also, it's also important to that the push for better graphics doesn't raise the price by any overwhelming margin. Some fans would certainly be more than willing to spend $500 on a particularly beefy Switch 2. I mean, I would, but I would definitely do it.
Why's that guy? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, a beefy Switch 2? You're going to get some Switch streams on my Twitch. I'll tell you that. But trying to compete at the same price point as the disc-based PlayStation and Xbox models would alienate many casual users and families to make it harder purchase to manage or justify. Although Valve's Steam Deck has shown that there's certainly a market for more expensive handheld, it's still a much smaller niche than the sphere on the Switch commands,
It's true. It's true.
This dude's got a good insight. According to the reports of private Switch 2 demonstrations at Gamescom 2023, the console is apparently able to run The Matrix Awakens NVIDIA DLSS, which renders frames at lower resolution and upscales them with AI to achieve a cleaner and sharper look. Okay, pretty cool. It's assuming it's not pushing DLSS beyond its reasonable limits. A rendering and resolution gap that's too big only becomes obvious. This means that the Switch 2 should be able to run multi-platform games with graphics that look comparable to the other systems with much more reasonable compromises than its processor. Achieving that at a $400 price point and that portable form factor could potentially be the perfect balance. I would definitely buy this. If it can play modern titles with good graphics, I want a more powerful Switch just in general. And I think this could be a really good idea to get people who haven't already purchased a Switch into the market of handhelds, at least. Because $400 in 2024 isn't a lot anymore, it feels like.
Yeah.
Compared to how everything else has just skyrocketed in value.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I think it's something to think about, but yeah, I feel like Nintendo trying to leverage something like NVIDIA DLSS is like such a smart move, especially on hardware that is like clearly weaker than you know, the competition. I think it's the only way they could really see to try to compete third party wise and try to maintain some relevancy in that area. So yeah, I think it'd be, I think it's really smart for Nintendo to try that and try, you know, use some of these, you know, rendering upscaling to try and, you know, get more performance for, you know, visuals.
I think that's pretty true. Just adding in, looking like Ben continues on at the end of the article talking about backwards compatibility that Nintendo could possibly use. And it could also be the best option for playing games that already struggle on the Switch.
It's very true.
That'd be a very good idea. I mean, just, I think most of the games that are worth emulation and to play are also on, or were on, like the N64 in particular, the GameCube, and the Wii. So if you can make it so the Switch 2 would openly and like freely emulate that, I mean, this wouldn't happen. This isn't something that like the Switch would do, I don't think. But imagine if they did. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
It'd be pretty nuts. So cool. It'd be pretty cool to get like native backwards compatibility, but I don't know how big that device would get if they did like native. Like, oh, try this.
Giant cartridge slot.
Yeah, like it had just, you know, it's like giant cartridge, and then your little Switch one goes in the middle perfectly. Like, but
that should be sick. It'd be like the giant cartridge, then you'd have Game Boy Advance, Game Boy cartridges,
kinda
and
sick, then you'd
have, and like I'm pretty sure. Like, how big is the disc? I could probably pull out a disc. Yeah, okay. I think the game cartridge is wider than a GameCube, but like an N64 cartridge is wider than a GameCube disc.
It's gotta be.
Yeah,
it's kind of wild.
I think too,
especially in today's this day and age. Like, if you can, I think Nintendo always did a good job of this. Of like, you know, of making the previous console backwards compatible on the new one. I always thought that was really cool. Yeah. Like, I love how the Wii was fully compatible with GameCube games. Like, it had it was fully native, right? Like, you just plug a disc in, you're good to go. You have the whole controller ports on the top. I mean, it was sick, right? Like, people were willing. They were like, oh, like, I'll definitely upgrade if I can play all the old games. Like, why not, right?
Yeah, why would you not do that?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you have to credit Sony with the PS5 for allowing PS4 backwards compatibility, right? Like, that's huge, and I think...
Well, they had to do that because they had no PS5 games.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
At launch, they didn't have anything, really.
That's fair. So. But yeah, I mean, it's cool to see that. I mean, Xbox 2, I mean, I know with the Series X, too, it's like... I know a lot of it's like emulation, but like you can, but like you could even throw in like a 360 disc, and if it's, you know, available for backwards compatibility, you could play it, you know, off the console, right? And no, even old Xbox games. I think like I saw a YouTube short. Someone plugged in a copy of Max Payne on the original Xbox in their Series X. I'm pretty sure it was a Series X, and that thing it downloaded and it was ready to go. I was like, that is nuts. Like, the fact that you could just do that, like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's basically like the thing I don't like about the Xbox is compatibility. Most of the backwards compatibility is all emulation.
Like, yes, sir. He caught it. He caught it. Let's go. But yeah, I think I don't know. Like, I think that's kind of it's something that sucks, right? Because obviously they're not going to make every single thing backwards compatible on like new consoles. Because you know, I don't know why. But anyway, like I think. Yeah, I think a lot of these older devices, like newer devices, right, you could at least do emulation. So, I mean, it's cool to see, like, you know, Nintendo try and do N64 and SNES and stuff like that, like, on emulation. I think it's pretty dope, but like, I don't know. I think it was cool whenever, like, your new hardware can at least play a generation back, right? Like, I feel like that should be a requirement. So, it'd be interesting, like, to see Nintendo kind of keep that trend, hopefully.
Yeah, it's usually, like, when there's a big step up from one generation to the next, for whatever reason. Like, something that I didn't know is the original Xbox and their inputs do not, like, are completely different from the original Xbox to the Xbox 360. Yeah. Like, if you got an adapter that was, like, it should just be a USB adapter from the original Xbox, that weird form factor that they have is very unique. Oh,
it was I don't know what you're talking about.
You should have that, and then you can have an adapter that could be, and then you should be able to just like plug an Xbox 360 controller.
Yeah,
that doesn't work. You need like a chip or an emulation, like not an like a redirect, like a path, like an encoder or something. I forgot like exactly what you need, a relay maybe, to send the signal from the modern hardware to the old hardware, and that's just one generation of it's like what? What?
That's wild.
I don't understand how that, like, those choices were made. It doesn't
Definitely doesn't make sense. It's wild. I think it's really cool. It's always cool to see like the different like hard mods and stuff like that are on these older consoles that like either add. It always blows my mind seeing like the HDMI mods for older consoles, because it's like they literally just like solder it into like the video port and stuff like that, and then like all of a sudden there's like they even make like a little cutout for the back, so it's like, or like takes up an old port, 3D so it's printed. Like perfect, like, and it just like it's modernizing these consoles, so it's like making up for what the, especially in like the Xbox, like I don't even know if there's something exists for that, but it would go crazy, you know.
There's that. Stuff that exists for that, like hardwiring and soldering for the N64. Like the OG N64, you can buy a kit, solder it to the motherboard, and you're good to go.
Well, that's what I was looking at too. Like the OG N64, there's actually, I forget the name of the company, but like they essentially have like, they made almost like a generic kind of HDMI port, where it was like, it's just like one unified piece of hardware, but you can actually hook it up to like, it's compatible with multiple different old consoles. So I think like Dreamcast is one of them, PlayStation is one of them. That might be it.
They have SCART cable, and all the other ones, or SCART, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, there's cool stuff like that, but it's cool. It's like it's a one thing you just like solder into your system, and then all of a sudden you got HDMI, and then you have all these emulated features of whether it's like shaders kind of like resolution, right? It's cool to see that some of the hard modding stuff out there. It's something I want to do one day to some of the older consoles, because it's pretty dope.
Well, if you learn how to solder, I got a couple Xboxes. We can figure something out.
Hit me up. I'd be 100% down. If you want to like do hard mods, I'd be willing to look into it and stuff. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about SAG-AFTRA. Let's get these people out of here, Mike.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're
cooking.
We're just kind of rambling. To be fair, that last article, my mic was messing up, so sorry, guys. But
that's what it is.
This is a continuation. This is a pretty much an update of what was going on last year.
It sure is. So this is from Game Informer. Many outlets covered this. It's one of the articles we found. But SAG-AFTRA signs agreement to allow devs to use AI voices in games. Well, this has caused quite a stir, Mike, I must say.
Always
a lot of the voice acting community. Last September, SAG-AFTRA union members voted yes to authorize a video game strike. Reasons why included desire for better wages, increased safety precautions, and protections around exploitative uses of artificial intelligence. Now, just a few months later, SAG-AFTRA has signed an agreement with Replica Studios, an AI voice technology company, to allow game developers to use AI voices, as reported by Game Developer. Various video game voice actors like Yong Ye, dude, his YouTube channel popped before he got super into voice acting and stuff like that. Dude has an awesome voice, but his YouTube is banging.
I had no idea he was a voice actor. I've always watched his YouTube video for gaming industry news.
Well, I'm pretty sure it was don't quote me here, but I'm pretty sure it was in the last year or two. He actually really got into voice acting.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, it's fairly recent. But he's a new English voice of Kazuma Kiryu. It's like a dragon. Anyway, he does one of the characters like a dragon. One of the greatest Sega IPs ever, I will say. He publicly stated that they and other voice actors they know were not aware of this. Every voice actor I know not only didn't approve this, writes in a tweet, they pretty much heard about this for the first time today on Twitter. I feel like it's a lot of the stuff, whether it's a layoff or something like this, it's wait, we approve this? I don't know about this.
I don't know why they would approve it. It's against their own interest.
Yeah.
So
I think so too. Yeah. I mean, this is so backwards from what we were reporting on. It's kind of crazy. So anyway, SAG-AFTRA says this new agreement, quote, paves the way for professional voice over artists to safely explore new employment opportunities for the digital voice replicas with industry-leading protections tailored to AI technology, allowing AAA video game studios and other companies working with Replica to access top SAG-AFTRA talent. According to the union, this agreement will enable Replica and union members to engage in, quote, under a fair ethical agreement to safely create and license a digital replica of their voice. From there, those licensed voices can be used in game development and other interactive media projects from pre-production to final release. Curiously, the union says this contract was approved by affected members of its voice over performing community. But yeah, is not alone in voicing his concern over the agreement publicly on Twitter and elsewhere. Steve Blum, whose video game credits include games like Deadpool, Call of Duty Black Ops, Rocksteady Batman Arkham series, and more, tweeted the following in response to SAG-AFTRA's announcement. He said, quote, excuse me? With all due respect, you state in the article, quote, approved by affected members of the union's voiceover performer community, end quote. Nobody in our community approved of this that I know of. Games are the bulk of my livelihood and have been for years. Who are you referring to? ? Oh, Mike.
What?
What are we doing?
How do you not know? What is happening? Who approved it then?
It's just a huge question mark. I don't know. Quote, this contract marks an important step towards the ethical use of AI voices in creative projects by game developers and sets the basis for fair and equitable employment of voice actors as they explore the new revenue opportunities provided by AI, SAG-AFTRA writes. Quote, in addition to establishing minimum terms and conditions, the agreement ensures performer consent and negotiation for uses of their digital voice double and requires that performers have the opportunity to opt out of its continued use in new works. I'm opting out of this one right away. X gonna give it to you. You know what I'm saying? I'm out. Am I like a Power Ranger?
I have to read that again. What, in addition to establishing minimum and conditions, the agreement ensures performer consent and negotiations for voice. Digital voice doubles and requires that performers... What? So, why would you agree to this?
Yeah, who in their right mind would agree to this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and who agreed to it because there are people affected and they've never even heard of this? I mean, granted, these are only two content creators and voice actors themselves that have made comments in these articles, but it's still like, how do you not let Yang Ya know?
That's what I'm saying.
He's a pretty well-known and established YouTuber.
Yeah. It's
How wouldn't he be in the know? He covers gaming industry news.
All the time.
All the time.
Like, it's nuts. I don't know. It's kind of wild. At this point, I need read receipts, Mike. You know what I'm saying? I need a list.
Facts. Yeah.
What's going on here? Like, who's approving this? I'm curious at this point. Not to, like, oust anyone, but it's like, I don't know. This is I feel like there would not be one voice actor. I'd be like, yeah, sure. Why not? Like, I don't know. Doesn't seem realistic.
I suppose there needs to be official announcement from the president, Frank Drescher. Oh, not Frank, Fran, my bad. On their comments, because you got to protect people, and it doesn't seem like they're protecting people in this case. We just had the article we covered a second ago about AI basically taking some jobs, and we need regulations for that. So just agreeing to allow devs to use AI voices. Why? I mean, I think it's inevitable for, like, maybe there's the fine print have some stipulations of, like, oh, you can only use a certain percentage of lines of the content. That would make sense. Hopefully it's not entire characters, like an entire storyline. Imagine, like, if all cyber was all AI generated. Idris Elba, no.
I'd be
Keanu Reeves. Nah.
You can try to fake him. Nah, this is nah. Troll, dude.
Nah. So what's your take, bro? What do you think?
I already give him my take. I think it's I think it's just a bad scratcher, man. I don't know who would have approved of this in the voice acting community, especially with kind of the known stance of most of them, right? And rightfully so. I think it's dumb if you're trying to. I mean, this is this thing of like AI taking jobs and whatnot, but it's like it's affecting, you know, quite literally everyone, I think, to a certain extent. And who knows? I mean, it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. But it's like, I don't know. This just seems weird and odd. I don't know. Something fishy's going on, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way, but I don't want to say it right now. It's like they just went on strike in September. Was this somebody's like last ditch strike to like try to bring people to the bargaining table so that they can get a payday, you know, and not really share it with the rest of them? Maybe they're like on the verge or something. I don't know. But,
I don't know, man.
This is going to be a developing story. I think this is going to be what happened. What's going forward for like 2024 is the AI integration into video games.
Exactly. This is gonna be the running theme of the year, the running topic. I feel like at the end of the year, we're gonna be sitting there, we're gonna be saying, talked a lot about AI this year and layoffs. Like it's all rough.
That's a fact, dude.
AI that was 2023. Like, could be a two-peat.
Yes. No. 2023 with Activision Blizzard, I think, and layoffs.
I mean, yeah, anyway. And that.
Oh, jeez, man,
it's wild. I hear Mike.
I guess the one good news is that the credits at the end of each game when you finish it is going to get shorter. Scrolls long. I'm just kidding.
Oh, this may got jokes.
Yeah, buddy. Well,
you know what? There's a positive in finding the light in things, Mike. So,
that's where you find the funniest things, is in the darkest places sometimes.
Yeah, that's facts, dude. That's facts.
Yeah. Well, I think it's about time for us to let people go. My mic keeps cutting out. I can't figure out why. People are probably irritated.
Probably just need to restart, you know? That's about it.
Yeah, but I feel like this has been a good start to the episode. I feel like if anybody wants to go ahead and check out for yourself, links are in the description below. Come join, hang out with us, discuss with us, please. We'd like to know your comments and opinions. And yeah, you got anything else for him, Kyle?
I think it's I'm excited to do another year of this, man. That's all I'm really gonna say.
It's gonna be a good one.
The energy was good today, even on the mic. But you know, what can we do about the mic?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
You know, the energy
mic's
was
being the mic
radiated. into the mic, and exactly. The mic blew up. That's what happened.
Exactly. You know, it's gonna be a good year.
Technical difficulties. It is what it is.
It is what it is, dude.
Your cat looks like he wants to go outside, so I'm gonna let you guys go. This has been the M2 Podcast, the start of the new season.
It doesn't even want you to end. Let's go.
I can't believe it's season 5. We appreciate you for tuning in. Thank you for watching. And yeah, we'll see you the next time. I'm Michael Anthony. This is Kyle Heath. We'll see you next week. Take it easy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Peace.